Support for this News from Lake Wobegon podcast comes from the Sleep Number bed by Select Comfort, the bed that lets you adjust the mattress firmness to your preference, your sleep number. And by the 43rd Pillsbury Bake Off Contest. You can vote for 100 recipes competing for $1 million grand prize starting January 7th at bakeoff.com.
Well, it's been a quiet week in Lake Wobegon, my hometown, out on the edge of the prairie. We have been enduring a kind of a non-winter in Minnesota. It's been in the 40s, and there's been no skating, no sliding. It's very strange there. It's sort of like San Francisco without the ocean or the mountains or the buildings. It's confusing to us. They are saying that we're going to get some snow this weekend, but they've been saying that for quite some time. The Bloodmobile came the other day to collect blood, and they noticed, to nobody's surprise, that people's blood was thinner because we've had this mild winter. Usually people from Minnesota produce a very thick blood, which is in demand for blood transfusions, especially in California. It's sold here at a premium price. It's much thicker because we absorb certain proteins, and the blood is saltier, which is true of most carnivores. And this is a blood which has powerful carnivorous hormones in it, so that we have, during the dead of winter, episodes every day of very powerful bloodlust, which makes the blood very appealing for transfusions for people who are stockbrokers and who are lawyers. Sometimes walking around town, we look at a dog who's walking around. We just feel this urge to go after it and get it down on the ground. Not a greyhound, but we don't have greyhounds in Lake Wobegon. Not a terrier, but a meatier dog, a beagle, say, or some long-haired dog. Sometimes people as well, vegetarians especially, we feel that. Great urge. Of course, we don't act on it, but a great urge. Just get them down and cut their throats and to devour them. They look good. And because they are vegetarians, we know that they would not resist, which, of course, makes them even more attractive to us. They're studying science in the schools. They don't study this sort of thing, of course. They're studying the planets in the fourth grade and learning that you can memorize the planets by the sentence, "My very educated mother just served us nachos." Mercury, Venus, Earth, Mars, Jupiter, Saturn, Uranus, and Neptune. It used to be the mother used to serve us 9 pizzas, but now she's just serving nachos since Pluto was downgraded. They have the unit on the sex education unit in the 5th grade in the Lake Wobegon schools, and the children are going off to learn whatever they're going to learn from teachers who tell them that they should go home and ask their parents any questions that they feel embarrassed to ask in school. I don't know where teachers get this idea. They get it out of a book. They don't get it from talking to parents, that's for sure. Parents know nothing about sex whatsoever, neither yours nor mine. Parents were beautiful, ignorant people who had no idea what was happening to them. And then this miracle came along that they didn't know what happened, except that it filled a great void in their lives. More than that, you really should go and look up in books or talk to somebody you don't know very well. Or go on the internet. It's all on the internet. They were taking up sex the other day, in a form in the women's circle in Lake Wobegon Lutheran Church, which is one of several women's groups that meets. There used to be just the old Dorcas Circle, which met to wind bandages and make quilts for the poor and to have Bible readings and prayer and so on. But then these other groups split off. There's a mother's circle, which meets in somebody's house and talks about motherly things. And there's also the Woman's Circle, which is a group of about 15 or 20. They meet every other week for about an hour in the evening in the church basement. And it's mostly just people telling stories about their about their faith journeys, so-called, although oftentimes there's not a lot of faith involved. They're just women standing up and telling stories about themselves, which some of the old stalwarts in the Lutheran Church find scandalous. It came to Pastor Enquist, and they said, what are these people doing meeting in the church? They should be meeting in a bar someplace. They're not reading scripture. They're not talking about the Lord at all. Why are these people here? He said, well, the church is trying to be welcoming. We're trying to be more open to all sorts of people. We're not a closed club here. We're open to all kinds of seekers. Seekers, they said. Seeking what? They're seeking attention. That's all it is. But this woman's circle is very popular. They tell stories. It's a storytelling club. And as always, tragedy trumps comedy in storytelling. So that stories about, say, the week that you spent in Costa Rica with three friends and you had a great time scuba diving and sailing and then dancing late at night on the beach with this whole crowd of people, none of whom were speaking English, and yet you've never felt so much at home before in your life. This sort of story does not have much traction compared to a story in which you are stranded in a small cabin in the hills of Montana in a snowstorm with three friends, one of whom goes off for help and is killed, and this happened 15 years ago, and it changed your life completely, and you've rediscovered all sorts of things about you that you didn't want to know, and your purpose in life and your faith came, and that's the sort of story that sort of holds sway there in the woman's circle. But they all have a good time. They all like it. There was a new one who came to the woman's circle this fall, and she just moved to Lake Wobegon from San Francisco. Her name was Lenore. They've never had a woman by that name before. She teaches math in the high school, and she's really terrific. We're lucky to have her. We have her as a result of a bad boyfriend in San Francisco whom she broke up with and who refused to accept it and who was following her around. And so, because he worked in the same school that she did, she needed a new job right away. And she looked in the want ads in early September and she found a job opening in Lake Wobegon, Minnesota. And by one of those sheer coincidences that people often steer by, her great-grandmother was born in Lake Wobegon. And so Lenore came out to Lake Wobegon, and she found a place to live, very cheap. It's a lake cabin owned by a family whose dad died a year ago, and they're reluctant to give it up, so they rent it out, and it's very cheap. Just one big room, knotty pine paneling, and then a canvas curtain and three bunk beds back behind it, and it's a sort of a semi-modern kitchen, was what the ad said. Semi-modern in this case, meaning there is no running water, so when you poop, you have to go out back into the little house. That's why it was so cheap. But she likes it out there all by herself, out in the woods, looking out over the lake. And you can always arrange your schedule of bowel movements, you know, to fit your day at work. And so she goes into school early in the morning to take a shower and to do that. And then she goes down to eat at the Chatterbox Cafe. The hard part about moving from San Francisco to Lake Wobegon is that nobody talks to you. Nobody. They just say hello. She went in every morning for breakfast to the Chatterbox Cafe, and Darlene, the waitress, it took her 3 weeks before she even said a word. Before she said, you work up to the school, don't you? And Lenore said, yes. And Darlene said, oh, I thought so. And that kind of satisfied her curiosity. Now, to be fair to people in Lake Wobegon, Lenore is tall. She's about 6'2", and she has very, very short hair, and she's very smart, and this makes her frightening to some people. And also, there's the fact that she's a conservative, a libertarian from San Francisco, and most of the teachers in the school are Democrats, so she doesn't quite fit in with all these liberals there. And she made one friend, Janelle, who's the gym teacher, after Lenore volunteered to be the assistant coach of the girls' volleyball team. And Janelle was a liberal, too. But they had a good time talking, just so long as the subject of the poor and the oppressed, you know, didn't come up. She went to the Lutheran church. She didn't care for that. The sermons, all of those code words, all those liberal code, compassion, peace, justice, all of that. And the good Samaritan being thrown in our faces, you know, every Sunday, as if everybody were lying by the roadside bleeding. It's not true. She's a libertarian. She's a conservative. She believes that things happen, you know. You get your just desserts in this life. The weak will falter. The strong will prevail. And nothing the government does can affect this very much. Math. She's teaching math to kids, two-thirds of whom don't get it. And there's not that much she can do to help them. So they're just going to have to find jobs where they don't need math. Sweeping floors or flipping burgers or in radio or something. Her job is to open the door for the gifted and the hardworking and to show them how high they can go. That's her philosophy. And it hasn't made her popular among the people in school. So she's gone to this women's circle. She finds it interesting. Women are able to talk openly. She enjoys hearing people talk, especially because she spends so much time online. She was astonished after a few weeks to add it up and to realize that she was spending 6-7 hours a day online. She was in 4 different chat rooms at once sometimes. She had her own pages to maintain on MySpace and also the Christian website, His Space, and also Friends Link and One to One and Geek Space and all of these other places. And these pages resulted in reams of email coming in and inquiries from men and so forth. And she was just spending hours a day typing. And you become lonely for the sound of another voice looking for somebody. She met this guy online. Lives up in Brainerd, not far from Lake Wobegon. His name is Ralph. Single. Auto mechanic. Had spent some time in Germany in the army. And he seemed to share her philosophy that government can't do it all. Government doesn't have the answers. We're really on our own here. She just was worried about all of the time that she was spending. So she went to the woman's circle and she listened to people's stories. They asked her to introduce herself. She wasn't sure how much she should say about politics. She stood up and she said, "My name is Lenore, and I come from San Francisco, and I'm happy to be here teaching math to kids, some of whom are really gifted. My favorite poem is Invictus." And she recited it. She recited it. "Out of this earth from pole to pole, black as the pit, I thank whatever gods may be for my inviolable soul. I am the master of my fate. I am the captain of my soul." Her philosophy. They clapped and they welcomed her to the group. The very next night, she was there in her cabin and she was sitting at her computer. She was talking to various people, to Bob in a weather station in Antarctica, and somebody out in Colorado, and somebody in the Bronx. And she saw a car pull up her long driveway, a car pull halfway up and stop and turn out its lights. All of the lights in the cabin were out, except for the screen of the computer, and she quickly folded that down. A man got out of the car and walked up the driveway towards the house, and in his left hand was something like a gun. It was dim out there in the half moonlight, but it was either a gun or it was a tire iron. She went to the cupboard, and back in behind the pancake mix, she keeps her own pistol. Of course, she has one. And she got it out, and she put a couple bullets in the chamber and took it off safety. And she held it by her side as he came up to the door and as he rapped on the door. And she reminded herself what to do. If he came through the door, she should back up and let him know that she was there and that he was to leave and that she had a gun. And if he kept on coming, then a chest shot was the one that would really work for her. He pounded on the door, And then he called her name, and she felt a sort of a chill. Some sort of predator had discovered her on the internet and had figured out where she lived, and he was here to get her. He called her name, and he said, "Are you all right?" And he opened the door, and he came through. He said, "It's me, it's Ralph. We had a date tonight, remember?" She backed up and she dropped the pistol in behind the cushions on the sofa just as he turned on the light. He looked at her. He said, "I'm sorry, I didn't mean to intrude. Your lights were out. I thought you had a power outage. I thought you needed help. We had a date for tonight, Friday night, remember?" In his left hand was a bouquet of roses. She walked towards him and she took the roses. It had been so long since she'd been this close to a man. It was sort of exciting to see him looking at her, sizing her up, a tall woman with short hair. She put the roses in the sink and she walked over to him and she kissed him. She kissed him on the lips. Why wait? She kissed him right on the lips. He was surprised and yet interested, she could tell. He stepped back. He said, "Don't you get lonely out here? Aren't you afraid living out here all by yourself?" She said, "Mister," she said, "I haven't been afraid since I was 11 years old. I know three ways to kill a man with my bare hands, and I'm working on a fourth." He laughed. He got it. It was a joke. That was good. He had a sense of humor. He said, "You want to go out, get something to eat?" She said, "No, let's eat here. You like pancakes?" He said, "We could go out." She said, "Baby, it's cold outside." He didn't know she was quoting a song. He said, "Okay, babes. Where are you from?" He said, "You're not from around here." She said, "I'm from San Francisco." He was thinking, trying to find something in his hard drive about San Francisco. He said, "They have earthquakes there." "Yeah," she said. He said, "Have you ever been in an earthquake?" "Yes," she said, "I have." "You want to know what it's like? I'll show you later." She made pancakes, and afterward they sat down on the couch. His arms were around her, and they were kissing. The light was out, and then she reached down, and she could feel that pistol down there behind the cushion. And she thought, "I better take this thing off safety." And she went to find the safety, and suddenly it went off. A powerful shot rang out, and it blew the whole cushion off the sofa. And he leaped, he levitated up, and he dashed to the door. And he said, "What? And you are so weird. Why did you do that?" She said, "To get your attention." And he was out the door and in his car. And he drove off down and away. She told this story to the women's circle. Most of it was true, right up to the point where they sat down on the couch. She made up the rest. She made up the part about the gun going off and the man running away. It just seemed to her to make a better story. Give the story an ending. But in fact, the story does not have an ending. She still sees Ralph every Friday night. He comes down from Brainerd, and they sit and they have pancakes. And they're together, and some days, nights, they talk a little bit, and other nights they don't. You can call it sex, you can call it warmth, you can call it proximity. But it's what we have in the winter in Minnesota, when we have winter, which we hope to have again soon. That's the news from Lake Wobegon, where all the women are strong, all the men are good-looking, and all the children are above average.
The News from Lake Wobegon podcast is supported by the 43rd Pillsbury Bake Off Contest. You can vote for 100 recipes competing for $1 million grand prize starting January 7th at bakeoff.com.